UFOs, extraterrestrials, the Antarctica, coronavirus. Our guest today has files and files about the subjects I just mentioned. She's been on Truth Be Told many times. She's one of our favorites. Yes, it's Emmy Award-winning investigative journalist, the one and only Linda Moulton Howe is on the show with us. Yes, it is Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. I'm excited to welcome back to Truth Be Told Studios the one and only Linda Moulton Howe.
Tony, thank you.
Yay! Thank you. I'm excited. I can't believe I was looking back when you were on last, and it's getting close to a year. I think it was right when coronavirus started. So I think that's probably where we're going to start today January. And so this is going to be a great topic. And, you know, I'm sure just the conversation is going to keep going and it's going to open up other topics. But I think coronavirus, that's where we left off. So let's go ahead and start again, because you said you had some information that just you learned the other day.
I think one of the most amazing discussions that I've had, and I've been interviewing people who are doctors, epidemiologists. And this Dr. Coe at the University of Pittsburgh, he's a cellular neurobiologist. He is dealing with the minute structures, getting down to the electron microscope level. And all the way back, I first talked to him in March, April, right at that point where everything was taking off in the United States for that terrible first climb and overwhelming of the hospitals. And the first interview, he said, "We've never seen anything like this, Linda." And this is what he began to describe. The coronavirus, that is COVID-19, it is spherical and it has those spikes. And the spikes are made out of different proteins. And he said, at the end of every one of those spikes is a sugar molecule. Each of the spikes has a different sugar molecule. And what they began to realize is that to the immune system in any given human body, the antibodies are supposed to come up to an invader, assess its shape. Shapes are what are important in the beginning to antibodies. And with the spikes coming off of the sphere of COVID, they realized that the sugar molecules vibrated at the ends, every single one, and the antibodies would then not be matching the pattern. And that seemed to be one of those problems when they say, how could somebody have this for 2-4 weeks, be carrying and sloughing off this terrible disease and not have a single symptom? Well, get this. They now know that the coronavirus with those spikes, that normally the spikes are what they use to go into what is called the ACE2, A-C-E-2. It's a big, long name. ACE2 is fine. The ACE2 receptor in the human cell is how this coronavirus gets into the human body. It would be like if you had a password that you had to go to get through your front door every day, and only you had that password, and then somebody came along and they were able to jiggle the door, and the door would open without having that password that you thought was unique. And now, once the COVID has opened up the cell, this is the astonishing piece. They have now been able to document that, let's say, Tony, we'll call it COVID A, has been able to get through your ACE2 receptor, and COVID B has been able to get through mine. We're two humans. We have the coronavirus in us, but the coronavirus in you hijacks a specific protein in your body that is different from the protein in my body. And what does it do with the proteins that it's hijacking? And it's an insidious sort of taking over a protein in the human body. And this is what it does. It covers up all of those spikes, camouflages the spiked antibody or spike coronavirus that the antibodies then cannot even see. And in my body, They do the same camouflaging, but they hijack a different protein.
Hmm.
They have never seen anything this insidious and complex. It is the camouflage ability of the coronavirus to wrap itself in a specific matter piece inside of the body that they're in as camouflage that is beginning to explain how you could have people who are carriers without symptoms. Then it reaches a point and the coronavirus can then spring inside the body that they have been camouflaged in. And then that person gets very sick. And there was another epidemiologist I was interviewing about this. And we were talking, I was explaining about this, Professor Coey explaining this discovery. And he said, you know, what you've just described is why a lot of us say coronavirus and viruses, they're not supposed to be life forms. They're supposed to be the strange twilight zone somewhere between crystals and inanimate matter and organic matter in this strange, strange Neverland. But he said, everything we know about COVID-19 is as if it strategizes, is cunning, keeps coming up with new plays, is disguising itself, and just this past 2 weeks, they know that it is mutating and that the mutation that is in the headline today in the New York Times about the fact that they're going to have to kill minks in the United States and minks in Northern Europe, because the minks have contracted lethal COVID from the workers in the mink farms. The workers are the humans. The minks have contracted COVID, and it is racing through the minks. And now they are coming to the conclusion that to control, they're going to have to kill all those minks.
Wow.
Jump over to another animal that is some of the best news we've had. And I'm going to be doing a report about this on my Earth Files YouTube channel this coming week. There are ferrets. Ferrets have been used in labs for a long time because various animals contract disease differently.
Mm-hmm.
Humans, lots of things, coronavirus for sure, goes through the nose. We breathe in or breathe through the mouth. Anything that comes through the nose, that is helpful to labs and to doctors because it's a very specific narrow target. Well, it turns out that ferrets, why they've been used in labs, to study a whole lot of different diseases and looking for ways to block diseases. Ferrets get contaminated almost identically to the way the human nose. The air comes up through the nostrils. This is the best news in a year. They now have in a laboratory in the United States, it is proven. It has gone through test after test in which they have been working just with the ferrets, and they have been able to do a spray. The spray lasts for 24 hours. You spray into the nostrils, and not a single one of the ferrets with the spray into the nostrils has contracted COVID from ferrets that are deliberately put in the test animal's cage with COVID. Sick, and the animals have not contracted COVID. Whereas when they put the sick animal in another cage and what is called a placebo, that there would be a ferret who had a placebo, did not have the spray, get sick and a lot of them die. And what right now, as we are coming out of the chaos of this election, on this very day of November 6th, this is a big headline. That this spray might be one of the next, we'll call it treatments or tools in what we need so desperately to be able to control COVID, that if they could, and they think they could make this spray in huge volumes very rapidly, and then people would have the spray, they would just spray it every day. It would last for 24 hours. So you're going to hear a lot more about that because we're still apparently months from a vaccine.
Can I ask a question? And somebody brought this up in the chat room. A lot of people don't think this is a pandemic. I think there's a difference. Yeah, some people don't think it's a pandemic. So I'm trying to.
How do you say that? How could anybody argue?
So that's my question, and I'm trying to say a pandemic and a disease doesn't always have to go in the same sentence, but it's still this is a disease that we have not seen before. So I mean, this is something that we don't have a cure for. So I'm just curious to see why people think that.
Oh, it's probably the QAnon. They're complete and total lying contamination. A pandemic, by definition, is a microbe that ends up killing a population of humans in the millions. That's the definition of a pandemic. From January to where we are right now, a number of cases in the world, I think it's 35 million recoveries.
Right.
And I think we in the United States, we are what? We're coming up to deaths that are around 29,000.
Right.
And this is a pandemic when humans do not have any control, a medical control on a coronavirus or a virus that is killing in the millions. That is a pandemic. And the idea, in other words, for somebody to say that we are not in the grip of the worst pandemic since 1917 to 1918, I mean, what kind of fantasy world is that?
Right, right. And what scares me is when that disease that does happen, not this one, I'm talking because this one is real. I believe it's real. In fact, I believe I caught COVID back in January because I don't catch the flu. I don't take the flu shot. I don't catch the flu. I've never had it. And when I was a kid, I never got the flu, but I got strep throat. So I never got it. Back in January, I got really sick. Fevers, chills, shortness of breath, pretty much loss of smell, taste.
Wow, that sounds like COVID.
Right. And I mean, at that time, there was nothing really talking about it. But I went, after about 2 weeks, I just could never feel better, or maybe a week. I went to the urgent care, and they did a flu swab. And they came back and he goes, yeah, you don't have the flu. I said, well, what do you think it is? He goes, some virus. I don't know. I don't know what it is. And so, you know, he put me on antibiotics. And honestly, I chose not to go in on antibiotics because I wasn't getting any worse. I just wasn't getting any better. So,
January?
Yeah. And it took me about five weeks to get over it.
Well, it sounds like COVID, and the thing about it is they now know that the antibodies can decline 26%. They've been doing these tests. And some, I'm just going to say that some news stories have said that that is like maybe a major problem. But immunologists and epidemiologists say this is what is going to happen. You will have a decline in antibodies.
Right.
But your immune system should have the memory of that spiny protein insidious camouflaging thing in your body. And therefore, you should be able to have an antibody reaction if COVID did come into you a second time. But now we're at another level of the insidiousness of this. They know that people have gotten COVID twice. There was a case of a child, and there was a teenager, and I believe the teenager on the second time around died. So this is so dangerous because it is changing. It is sophisticated. It is complex. It can come into the human body through the ACE2 receptor and through breathing. And I think that people have not understood every epidemiology and virologist nightmare is something that is airborne.
Right.
Because we are air-breathing creatures. That this is always the worst. When Fauci, all the way back at the beginning, said, this is my worst nightmare, that something this insidious, this lethal, this is really lethal, that it would have the ability, as we have now seen from MIT and Johns Hopkins, who have done these wonderful laboratory videos that are showing if you cough, a cough goes on to the air molecules. So moisture goes on to the air molecules. The cough propels the air molecules. And the one, I believe it was MIT, the computer in infrared was showing that it went 12 to 16 feet.
Hmm. Wow. Wow.
So not just 6 feet. We've had 6 feet as the being the safe distance.
Right. Right.
But the truth is, a cough through air is going to go at least 12 to 16 feet. And then if it what they've also found is that in one particular test, there was an area where there was a concentration of COVID in air particles 9 hours after the test, the people who were doing the test had put this out, put COVID out into the air on purpose. And it was in a laboratory. It wasn't like they were out in the street doing this. But that what they were trying to do is, how long will this last? How long would it be if it's up in air vents? And that's another thing. They are finding that the air conditioning or the airflow in buildings and arenas and concert halls is the single most important thing. If the air is moving at a certain speed, it will be unlikely for people to get COVID because COVID will be moved away from their noses and their mouths. That is, in some ways, that is another one of those hopeful rays, because in 2021 and 2022 going forward, there are a lot of doctors who say, we're going to have to learn to live with this. It's not going to go away. It'll be in the environment like the common coronavirus cold and MERS and SARS. If that's the case, we as a civilization are going to have to learn how to change our vulnerability to it. And if one of the best beginning, sort of like, how can you defeat COVID early? And that's airflow, masks.
Right.
I should be stressing, I never, ever understood, Tony, how could masks in a pandemic be turned into political conflict? I don't understand it, because it's airborne. If you can block an airborne disease by a mask, you're making an impact. How did it become political?
I don't know. Like I said, there are people in the chat room that are disagreeing, which, you know, that's, they're right. And I think that's amazing. And that, you know, that's the good thing about America. We can disagree on, you know, either side. But my fear is when, not if, we do have a pandemic where
we are in the middle of a year long.
But no, I'm talking about a pandemic where it's 10, 20% of the people die. Oh.
The, you know, lethal,
you, yeah, know, where
the lethality,
right, that we're not going to believe it until it's too late. So I don't think there's anything wrong with being cautious. I don't think there's, because even me, nobody likes to wear a mask, but I still go out. I wear a mask because the grocery stores, of course, and the restaurants, of course, take them off when I eat, of course. But I'm just saying, it's like, I just don't understand. To help protect. It's like, you know, my mother, who, you know, God rest her soul, she's passed away. But I mean, I wouldn't go into a nursing home where she was at to visit her, even though I'd want to, because I don't, if I had the flu, you know, I wouldn't want to go around people being sick with a flu, even a cold. I try to stay away from people if I have a cold. So I just, that I don't understand. It's, it's
well, and I've said, gosh, it was a radio broadcast, I think, early on in January, February, March, somewhere where it was becoming really clear we were headed into a major pandemic. And I was asked on a radio broadcast what I thought about wearing of the masks. And I said, do you love your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, your wife, your husband? Do you love people? Do you have a feeling of wanting to protect them? And that's what the mask, that's the whole point, is to help protect other people. If you were the carrier, what would you feel like if you knew that your cough killed somebody,
right,
in COVID? Right. And when you bring it down to that simple sentence, don't you just want to go get masks to wear them all the time? That's the way I feel.
Yeah. I'm not going to switch gears, but I'm going to ask you this. It's just like when we've had we were close to nuclear war, wars, you know, we always seem to have an increase in UFO sightings.
Yeah.
In COVID, have you heard of UFO increase, visitations? Have you heard anything that's saying that this might be a not man-made, but is it? Do you think this is something that could be from outer world? Do you think it's man-made? Do you think the aliens are coming in to help us? Because, you know, I always said if they're going to destroy us, they would have destroyed us a long time ago. So are they here to help us even through this pandemic?
It is a really good question. It goes to the heart of what haunts me about talking with Lynn Buchanan, the remote viewer who worked in Project Stargate, and doing an interview with him about 4 or 5 years ago, in which he said that everyone in Stargate who was working for the NSA, DIA, were tasked with, is there other consciousness in the universe?
Right.
What could they learn about it? And Lynn said everybody at one point or another really came back with the same information, that there are friendlies, neutrals, and unfriendlies who are very hostile. And in this particular time, when I honestly thought that by now, by the year 2020, that we would have that huge headline that would crack the consciousness of this world, we're not alone in this universe, we never have been, that our particular humanity is the result of genetic manipulation of already evolving primates on this planet, and that the manipulators of that genetic material, the manipulation, are extraterrestrial biological entities. And I've read those words in a document.
Right.
And that there was going to be a collision in this 2020, certainly the decade of 2020 to 2030. Of finally getting that headline, we're not alone, we never have been, and here is friendly ET from. And here are neutrals, and we might have some concern about these, but don't worry, humanity, because we've got the friendlies, and we've got these, and there's enough, and they will protect us. That basically is the story as Lynn Buchanan understood it. And now we're in 2020. And I think it is fair to say that every thinking, breathing human at some fundamental level is feeling like this is revolution. This is revolution in the pure sense of what that means. Revolution where every single thing that was is changing. We will never, ever be on Earth when it is like it was in December of 2019. That's gone. That world is gone. And now we're all trying to find how to walk, how to breathe, how to talk, how to function when the whole revolution is sweeping forward And we don't know where it's going, except that we know it's choppy, it is unpredictable, and that at the top of my list is, in a revolution, wouldn't this be the best time finally to introduce, sorry, we've been having to lie to you for a couple of centuries, and others lied for millions of years. We're not alone, and we're going to introduce now to the world in these critical times when we need help, ET 1, 2, and 3.
Right.
I frankly think that this planet could take it now, and people would not be jumping off of bridges and all the things that they said in 1936 or 38 when Orson Welles did his play act on the radio about ETs from Mars invading the Earth. And based on the fact that people got scared, our government said, we can never open this up because we will have suicides and uncontrol. Well, this is 2020. This is the beginning of a decade, which if it keeps unraveling as it has in this first year, all the way to 2030 and beyond, humans are going to have to grow up fast. In that growing up fast, we might as well finally get the truth. And in that truth, Tony, if we could be introduced to non-humans that our government knows for a fact keep helping us, have helped us, here's the question that always hangs on the other side of that statement. If that is true, if we have had help, why can't those ETs be right out in the street, in our public arenas, being introduced to us? If we have legitimate extraterrestrial, let's just say compassionate, or it's in their self-interest to help humans, why are they not public? And somebody said to me just a couple of weeks ago, Linda, it could be because there are hostiles that could hurt those ETs that are trying to help us. And so those ETs stay sort of in an underground where it's easier for them to help us without having to go to war with the hostiles. And then where all of this keeps leading is to a metaphor that I use, that we are in something like a 16-layer chess game. It is so complex, every layer, you cannot tell the players without technology. And that was a phrase, those words, you can't, this is so complex, Linda, meaning what's happening between ETs and this planet and solar system, that we have to use technologies that are accessing frequencies to tell whether this is a Homo sapiens sapien or something that is non-human, that is camouflaged as a human.
Hmm.
And some people say, humanity can't handle that, Linda. People will go berserk. They will start sobbing. They will faint. They will fall down. Well, I'm living proof that for 41 years, day after day, week after week, year after year, layer by layer by layer, I've been exposed to it's unending content that is shocking. But I haven't been disabled. I know many other people know a lot more than I do. They're not disabled. Personally, I would argue that if this whole planet, 7.8 billion people, if they could all, we could all be told the big truths all at once, I think it would strengthen us. I think we would begin to grow up in a relationship to each other. And if we did, as human to human, begin to, I guess I want to say, respect, there's love, have compassion, have empathy. Those words sort of grow to me one after the other. That's the way we should be to each other. Because once we all began to look at ourselves as we are something else's creation, and we better stick together once we know this in order to keep going forward, whatever we're going to do on Mars with Elon Musk building a base on the moon. We're headed out into the solar system. We're going to be a two-planet species if we survive ourselves and don't have nuclear war on the planet Earth. So there, I guess I'm going to throw it to you, Tony, in this way. If all of the truth of all of the complex issues that you've heard me discuss in conferences, radio, television, books, and on, if all of it were presented to the entire world simultaneously by scientists with an apology, we are sorry, we haven't told you this before, but now is time to know the truth. Do you think humanity would collapse?
No. I mean, I think maybe 50 to 100 years ago, I think because of the lack of technology, it may have, like with Orson Welles, like you said, it threw everybody in a panic. I think, but now the technology, the movies we have, the, you know, internet we constantly see, video games, I don't think any of that, you know, being exposed to the truth would necessarily be any shock to us. I even said, you know, now if Jesus came down himself, people would probably just go, yeah, you're crazy. I'm going to Walmart. You know, it's like, so I don't think anything really shocks as much anymore. In a way it's good, and in a way it's sad, but yeah, I don't see it crashing anything, any religions, and governments. I don't see it. So I don't know what they're waiting for. I don't know. I can't. It's hard to even believe the government still thinks we're so naive, that fragile. I think we've proven ourselves over the last decade for sure.
Yeah, and there is one other piece that probably is true, that what the secrecy has served are the humans who have been making scads of money since World War II on technologies back engineered from ET, whether they were crashes, deliberate, or they were something that were placed like a Trojan horse by ETs for us to back engineer to either hit dead ends. As one scientist told me, these ETs have given us a lot of technology, but they've given us what we think were our deliberate dead ends. Again, manipulating humans. And wouldn't it help all of us if we knew the truth about this type? Well, as I say that, I know the argument. Because they can shapeshift, because they can camouflage in human bodies, because they can camouflage in each other's bodies. You can't really say to poor, dumb, blind, deceived humans, if you see this type, it's okay. If you see this type, run. Because they all have the ability to camouflage in a huge number of matter bodies. That is a fact. But it doesn't mean that some of them who even do that are not trying to help us survive and grow. Right. And would you say at least it is fair to consider this? The universe seems to teach us, if you stay on the side of light, if you stay on the side of life, the side of love and truth, truth almost at the top, no matter what else is coming at you, if you define yourself, no matter what planet you're on, in truth and light and peace and love, maybe that is the best that we can possibly teach our fellow humans.
I agree. We need that more now than ever. And something that was kind of a big topic, and that's another one I kind of, it kind of disappeared this year, I think, because of everything going on, is the Antarctica. That was kind of a big topic. I mean, that's all, everybody was talking about it. You know, everybody's going down, you know, politicians, royalty, and then nothing. So what, why did that fall off of the pages?
Well, the people who went down were John Kerry,
right?
The Greek Orthodox minister. They were at the end of the election season 4 years ago in 2016. And then I believe it was in either January of 2017 or December of 2016, might have been December 2016. The most interesting of all was Buzz Aldrin.
Right.
And I saw it on CNN. It was a tweet from Buzz Aldrin saying, I have been in Antarctica and I have seen the face of evil.
Oh,
and
that's powerful.
It was a tweet and it was put on television and I downloaded it. I knew that somebody is going to try to deep six this. So I've always had that original tweet that came from Buzz Aldrin about his seeing the face of evil in Antarctica. Well, the news was reporting about Buzz Aldrin because he had been down in Antarctica. A lot of people didn't know he was down there until the night that the news said he's being medevaced out. What has happened to Buzz Aldrin? He's being medevaced out of Antarctica. Then came his tweet. I have just seen the face of evil. The next day, somebody put out another tweet saying, oh, it was just a joke. It wasn't a joke. It was a real tweet. And Buzz Aldrin has never, ever addressed what happened. It has never said what happened to him in Antarctica. Why was he medevaced out? Medevacing somebody out from Antarctica is a big deal. So I wonder, when you put the three together, John Kerry was Secretary of State going in the Barack Obama administration, and then Trump came in. I don't know about the Greek Orthodox spiritual leader, why he was. I think they were saying that, I think Kerry and the Greek Orthodox, they talked about going to see the penguins and the life in Antarctica because of global climate change. I think that was their public explanation. But it never rang true. And then came Buzz Aldrin. So those were the three dots. And then it was April of 2017 that I was in the UFO conference at Eureka Springs, Arkansas. And I was surrounded by 50 or 60 people after I had done a presentation and people were asking me questions. And a man with a kind of neat white beard, white hair, but stood out because it was a definite crew cut. And that to me is always military. And people are, just imagine a hubbub of people. And then this man, very military looking, leans forward and he says, my name is, and it was a name that I remembered still from an email exchange about 3 weeks or 2 weeks before the conference, who said, I'm a Marine. I have knowledge about Antarctica. I have this, that. And that's all I had seen had been the email, but I remembered the name. And so when he leaned forward and said, I am, and this is the name, and I'm, all these people are talking to me, I just looked at him and I said, can you go back and stay in that chair in the back corner until I can come back there? And he said, okay. That was the beginning of one of the most important work arcs in my career. That day led to 2 years, 2017, 2018, tremendous amount of danger. of my being able to finally get a Navy SEAL and the Marine on the record in my camera with written material releases and permissions, DD-214s, for a documentary for me to produce out of whatever we could do. And Tony, in I've had a long career so far. I graduated from Stanford University in 1968 with a master's degree in communication, where I made documentary films for 2 years. I did one with the Stanford Linear Accelerator, my master's thesis. I did a film for the Stanford Medical Center that they used for 19 years. My love, my passion has been, always will be, hard left brain science. That's my background. That's what I did. When I married, my husband wanted to go get another degree in Harvard. He had Yale undergraduate. I had the University of Colorado. We met at Stanford. We both were in the same class. I was the only girl in 27 guys and me, class of 28. We made films for 2 years. Then he and I got married. He wanted to go to Harvard to get an MBA. So he went Yale, Stanford, Harvard. And I went I was working news at each place where he was. And when we went to Boston, I was hired to do all their medical programming at the WCBB station in Boston. And all of that was the backdrop of how I got to be director of special projects at the CBS station in Denver, and that we got there in 76. And by the fall of 79, I was looking at headlines in the Denver Post and the Rocky Mountain News. The return, that was the thing that grabbed me, the return of bloodless, trackless animal mutilations. I knew nothing about animal mutilations.
I'm sure it sounded fascinating, though.
Well, I'm going to do a big jump cut, but I wanted to go back to 79 so I could explain why 2018 was the single hardest, most dangerous thing I've done in my life. When I started in September of 1979 with my first discussion with a sheriff about mutilations, and he told me, "I'll save you some time. The perpetrators are creatures from outer space."
He said that.
Oh, yeah. He was not the only. He was Sheriff Tex Graves was the first one that I talked to. He had been sheriff for 23 years, Logan County in Sterling, Colorado. Real tough John Wayne character. I really love the guy. He was just flat out everything, straight, honest, factual. And when he said that to me, "Linda, I'll save you some time. The perpetrators are creatures from outer space." And talked about the beams that he had seen coming from round lights in the sky, and ranchers who had seen animals go up in beams of light, but they were terrified to stand in front of a TV camera. Everybody was terrified to say, "I saw a beam. I saw a UFO. I know that the mutilations are being done by something that is not from Earth." I worked 9 months, 18-hour days. I was married, my daughter, Laura, in 79 to 80 was 5 to 6 years old. And I remember telling my husband, "I'm getting into something I don't understand. It could be dangerous." We had a long discussion. I said, I want to see this through. I'm director of special projects at the station. I want to do this, but I may have to move to an apartment because I don't want to jeopardize you and Laura. We had that discussion. I'm telling you that just to set the tone for where I'm going in 2018. Looking back, when I was working from 79 to 80, those 9 months, what I didn't know and would come to find out by 1983, 84, 85, less than a decade later. The CIA, I was being monitored. I was being photographed. My phone was tapped. I got that confirmation from the phone company in Denver because I had so many problems with my phone at the station at my home when I was working on A Strange Harvest. But I knew of the beginning of a completely different danger as an American journalist that I honestly lived and was brought up that I could do and be anything that I wanted to be. And that as a reporter, as a producer in television, I would be protected by the First Amendment. And that I could take on any subject. And I lived, breathed, and worked in that context. When I was shown proof, a few years after my broadcast that ended up getting a regional Emmy, and it was like a bomb went off when A Strange Harvest was broadcast, that I was followed, my phone was tapped, photographs of me, people who could describe what I was wearing in a particular airport in a particular day. Things began to change in terms of what kind of landscape am I in here? Like something begins to, you have grown up and the United States of America is one thing and it's protective and it's noble and it is going to, the government and the Constitution are going to protect me. And then that begins to weaken. And then things happen and you realize I have no protection. The government, in fact, wants me dead. 1986, without question, they wanted me dead. The evolution from 1979, A Strange Harvest, to 89, to 99, 2009, 2017. The Marine that leans forward in that group of people that sets up a whole new, you need to know what is really happening in Antarctica, 2 miles beneath the ice. And that what I was confronted with between April of 2017 until July of 2018. How can I get on video the truth from these two men who have served in the United States, one in the SEALs, one in the Marines, and their buddies? How do I do it and protect them? How do I do it without talking on phones that are tapped? Mm-hmm. How do I do it so that I am not going to release, capture, or attack on them by the very fact of my doing production if I have production people who can talk? That I'm the only one who can guarantee to them that if I act and work alone, nobody is going to know where I am or what I'm doing. And that I can guarantee that for them, but I can't guarantee they will not be followed. And it was on that discussion and on those grounds that I began to put together the single hardest, most dangerous production of my entire career. And the short form of this is, I did not want to have any communication about anything in the computer, phone, cell phone. You should try that. Try for a week to try to set up and organize something where you're not on any one of those three.
That would be tough.
I use FedEx.
Ah.
And that was a safe way. And I had the experience of covering the trip as something completely different and innocent. And I had to live that innocence for a week before I did the dangerous trip to the real location, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Cover. And I'm trying to, I don't want to talk about details too much, but just to say it was a huge challenge. And on top of it all, I had to run audio, camera, set up, do everything by myself. It wouldn't be the first time in my career that I'd face that challenge. At Stanford, when we were doing our documentaries, we would hire each other to do audio or camera, and sometimes we had to do everything. So it wasn't completely foreign, but let me tell you, you're going to be working with a SEAL. You're going to be working with a Marine. The subject is extraterrestrial, ancient architecture 2 miles under the ice that is still active and maybe 34 million years old and is being kept from the world, and that you've got to do it in a location that you've done everything you can in your existence to keep the whole world from having a clue where you are, and that if something does happen, who would know? How? I mean, I'm being really serious.
Right.
Okay, now, I get to the location not knowing if anybody's going to show up. I start setting up my gear, nervous as can be. I get a cell phone call, which was allowed just for, we had agreed that we could use the cell phone for just a hello, meaning I'm here. And about 40 minutes later, because I was just waiting, no discussion on phones. I just know they're there and I'm waiting. And then there's a knock on the door and in comes the Marine and his wife. And he says, there's a problem with Spartan 1. And what? He said, there's a problem. He says he thinks he will be here in an hour. And he said, you will have to wait to hear from him because we couldn't talk. So I have everything that I think that I can possibly do to be ready that if he gets there, we will be able still to use the day and into the evening if he's willing to start this. In about an hour or so, he and his wife arrived. And this is what he told me happened. They're in their house. He hears I think it was a knock at the door. Remember, he is a heavy duty SEAL.
Right.
And I mean, you are in the energy that is not like any other human being you have ever known. And I've only met a couple and they have both had the same feeling. And he said, he went to the door and he could see a man, black hat, black hair, black suit. I think he had a white shirt. And he opened the door. And the man didn't introduce himself. He just said, I am here to tell you that you are not to make your meeting today with Linda Moulton Howe. And he said, what meeting? And the man said, you know what meeting.
and you are not to go to that meeting, and you are never to talk with Linda Moulton Howe again. And as he's talking to me now in that room for the first time meeting him, his voice dropped, very, very quiet, very humble, sort of a humbleness about this very powerful man. And he said, "I've been trained to kill another human being in 7 seconds. I said, "Well, how would you do that?" He said, "It's what I did today. I just aimed lower." And when he did that, like this,
oh, God.
Right to here on me, what I just did to the limb, scared me to death.
I bet.
I will never forget it, because the energy and the power of somebody who knows what they are doing, right?
Right.
Not only can do it, but can pull back right at that moment. Oh, my God. So, and when he said, "I just aimed lower," he hit him in here. And he said, he went to the ground. I told him, "You ever want to talk to me again, you call, you set up a meeting, but you are never, ever to walk through my gate into my yard ever again.
I probably wouldn't.
I will kill you." And the man, and I believe, I'm telling you, these Spartan types, they're not liars. You get a kind of under speaking. And he said, the man crawled out on his hands and knees through their gate. And he said, "And now I'm here." Spartan One brought guns. I've never in my existence before or since been surrounded by all kinds of guns. And they said, "We don't want to alarm you. We just feel that we must be able to protect you. And nobody is going to come in here and do anything to you. We will protect you." It was, what a way. I've already told you I'm having to do everything myself. And now there's guns added to the equation and the possibility of somebody trying to come through doors.
Right.
And that day, we started when there was still light out. And all I could do is set them where you see, I pulled the desk that was in this place. And I had only the ability for one shot. I could possibly do pan. I could possibly do a little zooming. But I had to be very careful not to be very dynamic, but to make sure that audio and the camera were running at all times, that they were speaking, and then worrying about battery power, worrying about whether, and I had an audio backup, and I right. had to make sure that that was functioning. And we began. And as it unfolded and we went into the night and then the next morning, I kept thinking, it's almost as if I were living something between a dream and a nightmare, that I had spent so much time trying to figure out how to do this. And then when it actually is occurring, it emerged out of such strange, like a television drama, that you feel almost like you're, it's surreal. That's what surreal is. It goes beyond reality. And you feel like that you are now in something that is taking on a life of its own, because you hung by your fingernails. And that's what I want to leave you and everybody. Sometimes when you're hanging by your fingernails, as long as you don't let go, there can be angels, there can be light, there can mm-hmm. be forces that just come along and they somehow lift you up because what I was able to bring back and put in the film Antarctica, Alien Secrets Beneath the Ice, I personally think that what is in that documentary that I was able to release by December of 2018, that it was, or into 2019, it's true. There's real truth that has been denied all of us. And that these military guys who have been there, Spartan 1 said to me, and he's the guy who can kill somebody in 7 seconds, and he carries this tremendous power, but is extremely humble. And he said to me, it's wrong for this huge, huge alien construct to be deep under that ice in Antarctica. And the entire world has been denied any knowledge about it. And in fact, people have been killed to keep it secret.
Wow. Well, as always, you are just amazing. I love you. I love your stories, and I love that you like you said, 41 years. I can't believe 41 years you've been.
I know. Just like,
but 41 years that you've been researching and interviewing and you know, selflessly doing this, you know, to give us the information, because it's easy for all of us, everybody in the chat room, even for me, just to read it on the internet. You know, that's where everybody wants to become experts, because they read it on the internet. It's like, no. Linda goes directly to the sources in the fields, all these different, you know, organizations, government officials, government former employees. She speaks to them. That's where you get the facts. Yeah. And so, you know, like I said, it's easy to pick up your phone and go, oh, I'm an expert because I read an article. No, that's not where you learn.
No.
But I appreciate you. And like I said, I can't believe it's already an hour, but you're going to definitely have to come back. But you don't have to wait for her to come back to see her, because you have your own YouTube channel. You do this weekly, right?
That's right. On Wednesday night, starting at 7:30 p.m. Mountain in all time zones around the world, the Earth Files YouTube channel, Tony, it keeps growing.
Oh,
we've broken
I'm
through 5,000 subscribers. And what I love is that I'm beginning to feel like there is a family around the world in all these languages. We now have closed caption translations. And I get email from people who are, they're speaking in all kinds of languages, and I go to Google to do translations. But bottom line, before we sign off, these are real human beings, our fellow human beings. And they have seen beams. They have seen things come through walls. They have gone through walls. People on this planet, no, we are not alone in this universe. Why can this not be in this revolution with COVID? Why can this not be the perfect time for the whole world to be told the whole truth?
Well, you, like you said, Linda is the real deal. I'm always going to love you. I'm always going to support you. And I always look to you for advice when it comes to this subject. So, everybody, thank you so much. The people in the chat room, if you have comments that you disagree with, you know what, that's fine. I'm all about hearing both sides. I don't get where people, you know, and this is not just for tonight. I'm talking about anybody, you know, people that just want to degrade other people because they don't believe somebody else's views. That's not the place. But if you want to give us your opinion, give us your, you know, facts that you think you have, I love hearing it. I love hearing it. But Linda, like I said, is in the field. Linda does the interviews. And I want you to tune in to her show every Wednesday, 9:30, I think, is it, p.m.?
It's 7:30 p.m. Mountain.
Mountain.
6:30 p.m. California. 6:30, 7:30, 8:30, 9:30 across the United States.
Yeah, 9:30 Eastern. The there you go.
But, and truth be told, Tony.
Woo, woo, woo.
Truth
yes.
be told.
That's right. Truth be told. Like I said, we've been doing this a long time. We're coming up on our 600 episodes. And we appreciate all of you for, you know, supporting us and being a part of it. But Linda, thank you so much. Go to earthfiles.com. Check out her website, Earth Files, on Linda Moulton Howe on YouTube. And until next time, Linda, we love you. All right, everybody, thank you so much. Please subscribe. Share this with everybody. As you know, this is good information and your support always to help us grow and get more people interacting with us, the better. So until next time, I'm Tony Sweet. This is Truth Be Told. Bye-bye.